It's time for Mac Break Weekly Fear the Beer. Jim Dalrymple is back with Renee and Andy. We're going to talk about the latest Apple news, including that new Apple store that opened in San Francisco, Apple rumors for WWDC, including a new MacBook Pro, and those iPhone 7 rumors. Are they to be credited? It's all coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 508, recorded Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. Gooey breakfast. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Ministry of Supply. Ministry of Supply uses performance technology to make your work clothes incredibly comfortable. For performance menswear designed to work with your body, visit ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak to get 15% off your first purchase. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com/MacBreak and get $5 off your first order. Time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple Land. And there is lots of news, believe it or not, from Apple Land. We'll start with the man with the beard, Jim Dalrymple's back. Great to have you back, Jim, from loopinsight.com.
Great to be here.
I love having you on. And you went inside today.
I did. No more airplane strafing, you know.
I just want you to know that has nothing to do with why we haven't had you on. We've been jammed because... What we try to do, I don't really want to do more than four panelists. And so Matt and Alex Lindsay keeps showing up, damn him. So
we love Alex Lindsay.
but we're glad to have you. Alex took the day off, and we're glad to have Jim Dalrymple with us. And there's something to talk about, too, because WWDC is just around the corner. Yeah. And you and Renee Ritchie might have something to say about it. Hello, Renee. iMore.com.
Hello. I'm just happy that Jim is actually in a house because he keeps saying he lives under a bridge, and this makes me so much happier for his future.
He only looks like he lives under a bridge.
I stayed at a friend's house.
I'm doing a podcast. Leave.
Can I borrow your bridge? Also with us, Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, ncwob.com. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Big rumor, and I don't know whether to credit it or not. It comes from Ming-Chi Kuo of, analyst, who seems to have a fairly good track record, that there will be new MacBook Pros with fingerprint readers and OLED keys. Credible? Can we get a yep or a nope from Mr. D?
Look, I think the best way to look at WWDC is that it is first and foremost a developer conference. So they're going to have all kinds of APIs and all kinds of software news. But it's also been the place where they do release new Macs. So, I mean, I don't think we'll see new iPads or new iPhones, but Macs have been released there pretty steadily in the past year. So I wouldn't doubt that there's... some kind of Mac on the horizon.
It would make sense too, because it's a developer conference. That's what developers use. They're not using iPads to write software, so that would make sense.
I mean, they've done it before. To Jim's point, I mean, for years, every morning at WWT, everyone lined up outside the Apple store waiting to get whatever shipments of the brand new MacBook they got in.
Right.
So this historical precedent, and Ming-Chi Kuo does have good supply chain sources, and they're not always exactly temporally aligned because things do get moved forward or backwards. Right. But I don't want to say overdue because Intel has to make the chips before Apple can use them. But, you know, Skylake has been around for a while, and it'd be great to see those.
One of the last, you know, OEMs to make a Skylake laptop. I mean, everybody else, including Microsoft, I've got the HP MacBook clone here. They're all using Skylake. So, you know, it's time, Apple, I guess. It used to be Apple be the first to get the new Intel chips. And I think this was a wise thing to wait on. Skylake is It was very challenging for Microsoft, for instance.
They were super patient with this and other features. Like, the rumors are one thing. Like, Apple's been working on Touch ID Max and a whole bunch of stuff for a long time. But it's always the question of how. Like, when you look at how it's done on iOS, there's a very clear chain from Apple's custom chipset to the sensor and hardware lockdown. It's incredibly secure. But now they're using an Intel chipset. And is there an Intel version of the secure enclave? And how are they protecting that? Because computers are traditionally more accessible than iOS devices. So for me, it's not so much what are they going to do, but how are they going to implement it? And then, you know, I'll listen to Security Now and you and Steve go through it. And that to me is going to be the fascinating part.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, let's have a fingerprint chip, but how are you going to protect all of that information? Because in iOS, it all is protected. So, you know, there's more to it than just adding a feature of you can log in with your fingerprint.
We should point out that the Chance Miller, writing in 9 to 5 Mac, confirms this. He says our own sources confirm it. But he's saying fourth quarter. So they may announce it next month, but you're going to be waiting for a little while.
It's always an interesting idea when you're thinking about what hardware could be at least shown off at WWDC, because it could be that there is an empty session in the schedule right now that reflects here's how to support the new swipe OLED display that we're going to be putting into every MacBook from now on, or here's how you can integrate with this new Touch ID sensor fob that we're putting on to make it independent with other devices, and also just to the other points that were being made, it's a lot easier for a lot of PC makers to just swap in a new CPU because they really are built that way. But it's not necessarily as easy as replacing a light bulb with an LED bulb. Oftentimes, there are just a whole bunch of knock-on effects that you can't anticipate. Plus, Apple tends to take a system-wide approach. Rather than being the first to put a Skylake processor in, they tend to their personality tends to be, how can we optimize things to take advantage of this new processor? They'll get an automatic bump just by putting the CPU in, but there are ways that they can make their existing subsystems work even better above what simple hot swap specs would give them.
Let me give you the rundown from the 9 to 5 Mac article. There'll be 13 and 15 inch models. They will be thinner and lighter, okay, with design, and I like this. I'm thrilled to hear this, with design cues from the 12 inch MacBook, Touch ID support, and an OLED display touch bar above the keyboard that will replace the physical function keys, metal injection molded hinges, and I'd be very happy to hear this too, USB-C support. I'm hoping that's the power adapter as well. Actually, if you put USB-C in, you might as well make it the power adapter. Yep. And Thunderbolt 3, which was, of course, missing on the updated MacBook. They say they will also, now this one is a stretch because they just released a new MacBook. They'll introduce a new 13-inch MacBook similar to the 12-inch Retina model. And the MacBook, this is according to Quo, Apple will make the MacBook Air entry-level, the MacBook mid-tier, and MacBook Pro high-end. Does that make sense to keep the Air going?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, like, just position it. Well, a couple of things. Like, to Andy's point, it is a holistic approach. They do, like, sometimes they do get the chips early because in order to make that MacBook Air, they need that chip from Intel to do it. So they have to get that chip right away. In this case, they might be waiting on that Touch ID sensor to properly work, in which case they're going to bump to Skylake. But it makes no sense to put out a Skylake computer and then 3 months later bump it with a Touch ID sensor. So they have to sort of manage when those technologies are ready. And right now, the MacBook, just by virtue of how expensive it is and how new it is not the top of the line in terms of performance, but in terms of being the newest Mac, it absolutely is. When the MacBook Pro comes out with its new redesign, suddenly it's the newest, hottest thing, and the MacBook naturally falls to middle. And because MacBook Air hasn't been discontinued, but, you know, voila, it's $900, that it just naturally falls into the lower price. So there is a lot of thought that goes into it, but all of this also makes sense when you look at how those products are released.
I just don't... It makes a lot. I think it makes sense for them to go for, if we're going to go with the traditional good, better, best product lines, to make the MacBook Air the good one, or at least the most expensive, most affordable, relatively speaking. Make the MacBook the desirable one, the one that, well, why don't we spend $200 more, get this really nice one that's slimmer and has all these other nice features, and the MacBook Pro. I can't say anything as to these rumors about the design of the next MacBook Pro, but this does not look like a Pro device. It looks like a really good MacBook. So I'd be, especially if they follow through. There's also some parts of the rumor that says that the keyboard is going to be along the lines of the Magic Keyboard, or along the lines of the sort of keyboard that you get with a plain MacBook, which would kind of stink in a Pro level machine. This is the, again, we're only responding to rumors, but this does not describe to me a $2,300 computer. But it's something that's been on my mind since Google I/O last week, is that I wouldn't be terribly surprised now if for the past several months Apple has decided that we are absolutely not in a position to compete in any way with all the sectors of the laptop market that are eating our lunch. Right now, they are just – it's a desperate situation in education for Apple right now. Yeah. Because nobody
Google made a big point about the Chromebook outselling the MacBook – the Macintosh. Yeah. Yep. All Macs last quarter.
And it's not, and it doesn't help that this is now – it used to be – it was bad enough when this was a $300 laptop that was well-made, that runs a really nice free suite of software that education and a lot of even companies really like. It's going to get even worse at the end of the year when Android N apps can run natively, not in some sort of a transmogrification mode, but a native Android N app will run on this same $300 Chromebook. So basically now we could have departments, IT departments saying, if all these people that were sending out with notebooks need to do is to run Microsoft Office, the Android N version of Microsoft Office is plenty muscular for what they need to do. So we're no longer going to even be approving purchases of laptops that cost more than $500. We can buy them really good $300 notebooks, and if they break, we can just simply give them a brand new one, and they'll be up and running in a half an hour. So it wouldn't surprise me if, for maybe even for some time, Apple has said we are not even going to pretend that we can compete in any way, shape, or form with any sort of a budget or even early mid-level sort of machine. And if they simply said, guess what, the cheapest notebook we will ever make is going to be $1,000. It's going to be aluminum case. It's going to be built to our specifications. And we understand that we're not going to sell any more computers really to education. We'll work as hard as we can, but we, on some level, we know that this is not where we're going to be selling a lot of iPads and notebooks.
Can I point out that it's not clear, but when they say Q4, they may mean Apple's fiscal fourth quarter, which is actually July, August, September.
Well, if we go back in history, the new Mac Pro was announced at WWDC, but didn't ship till the end of the year, and they just wanted to give developers sort of a hint.
But this could
the future.
Conceivably be announced in June and out in July, right? I mean, that would fit this timeline, Q4, right?
Yeah, they've done it where this.
You would think at that point that they would specify fiscal Q4 as opposed to fourth quarter of the year.
Okay. I mean, yeah. So it has happened that they've announced stuff that's not been out till the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's always better when developers can run out and buy it right away. And that's what makes it exciting for all of us. It's like almost like, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but Google I/O didn't have a lot of stuff that was immediate. And people are like, I want this. I can't see it. And then like they lose a little bit of immediate excitement. But to the earlier point, too, with Apple and education is really interesting because it's talking about unit numbers. So the numbers of Chromebooks shipped is eclipsing the number of MacBooks shipped.
Not dollar, of course.
No, not dollars. And Apple has shown, like Michael Gartenberg did a really good article on this the other day, because he was saying the perception is that Apple has to dominate a market in order to be successful. When historically, that's not the case. iPod was an anomaly. Apple has never dominated the Mac market. They've had, you know, single-digit Mac share for a long, long, long time and made billions of dollars. And even iPhone, which is the most successful business in the history of non-petroleum products, is not the market leader. It doesn't dominate the smartphone market, but it makes ungodly amounts of money. So, you know, Andy might be correct. Apple might decide, like they did with netbooks, we want no part of this ultra-cheap PC market. We've projected that we can still, you know, be the most successful premium laptop on the market and make all the money and be super happy about it.
Well, I think Apple's already made that decision. They made that decision years ago, and they haven't wavered from what they set out years ago. You know, netbooks were not something that they wanted to do, and I don't. I think that they're perfectly happy to just let the cheap phones, the cheap tablets, the cheap computers go to other companies, and they are going to keep their standards. And that's what we expect from Apple. We expect the standards to be high.
That could be a problem, though, or rather that could be a less successful way to think in the next few years, because It's not directly analogous to the situation with netbooks, where a netbook was just a really, really cheap-ass Windows machine that nobody is going to be able to use.
It hurt the Windows market, I think, almost permanently.
It hurt the manufacturers so crappy.
Yeah, exactly. It caused a lot of problems that way. The problem with Chromebooks in regards to Apple, though, is that there is no – I've talked to a lot of mostly people who are IT and education, and the impression I get from them is that they don't see a single they don't see a single category of their job that is not done better if they have a Chromebook, because they're not being built like the way that netbooks were being made. They're not cheaply made. They're actually built very, very nicely. A lot of these manufacturers understand that they're being issued to people who are it's sort of like issuing the way that you design a car that's going to be driven by cops versus the way you design a car but that's going to be driven by someone who owns it and cares about it. So they're actually being made very, very durably, but they find that it's not just that that they're cheap. It's the fact that the administration tools are incredible. The way that you can manage 100 devices and manage the content that's on there is also incredible. The software that Google gives you for managing classrooms and managing school systems is also incredible. And so even if Chromebooks cost $700 and were made out of milled aluminum, the impression I get from these administrators is that they would still be buying Chromebooks and not MacBooks, because all of that stuff that helps them to do their jobs is not there for Mac. Remember that just a few years ago, Apple has always been very, very serious about trying to sell iPads to schools. When they were doing iBooks Author, part of that was to, at least in high school level and college level, to basically create a courseware market that would help them to sell iPads. They still have teams out that help administrators put iPads in education. They still encourage third-party manufacturers to make these rack systems that can rack secure and rack recharge classrooms full of iPads. So This is a bigger problem, because it's not just making cheaper hardware. It's making a tool that suits the needs of the people who are buying these things. And in education, I want to make sure I'm limiting my comments to education. In education, Apple is no longer making products that suit that market's needs or those IT people's needs.
So we're looking at one specific segment of the market, and I can't argue your points. But I think if you look at what Apple is doing, they're looking at a bigger picture. So Apple is selling, great amounts of Macs, iPads, iPhones, whatever it is. But they're looking at what's coming next. It's like the iPod. You know, they were selling iPods. They were the high-end music maker. They had no problem in coming out with an iPhone that acted as also an iPod. So when you look at the market that we have in education, is Apple okay with losing some of that education market to hold on to its manufacturing standards, all the while looking at what is the next big thing? I mean, is it this, the rumored car, or is it something else? Ultimately, Apple has to make an overall profit, you know, for its shareholders. That's what it has to do. So it has to keep an eye on, you know, what's next in 3 years, what's next in 5 years, 10 years. That's what they have to work towards. And as long as they're doing that, the company is going to remain successful, just like they lost lots of market share in the music players with the iPod over the years. It doesn't really matter as a company, because they gained so much market share in iPhones. So I think that's kind of what they're looking at.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so Apple is a powerful company by the only metric that matters. They have the ability to do what they want to do and to steer towards the target that they want to steer. If they are on companies that are on really, really thin margins, the next quarter could be the last quarter. The next four quarters could be the last job that a lot of these CEOs will ever have. Whereas Apple can basically make a decision that doesn't have to pay off for another 3, 4, or 5 years. And they can also say, they can also decide to say goodbye to a specific market, no matter how profitable that market is, if they feel that the needs of that market are not suited to what their strengths are as a company. Google can do an excellent job with Chromebooks because that's what they're really, really good at. They're good at free software that works great. So they're not going to be quite so good at selling you a $1,500 notebook that makes you feel good about having spent $1,500 on that notebook.
Or a Pixel.
Yeah. a beautiful device, but oh goodness gracious, it just doesn't. It's like I had one for 3 months and I had such love for the design. It made me wish that my MacBook had some sharp corners on it. And I love that the rainbow LEDs on the top of it. But if I had spent $12.99 on this, I would think, I really wish I'd spent $300 on a Samsung Chromebook and then $1,000 on liquor and hotel rooms.
Maybe in that order.
Well, I was glad to have bought the Pixel. There is a $999 version of it you can buy with an i5. And actually, I use it all the time. It's really good. It's interesting because Apple's not going down without a fight. In Maine, Maine's Department of Education surveyed students. And the students who were using iPads came in, as well as teachers, overwhelmingly in favor of replacing the iPads with laptops. 88.5% of teachers and 74% of students said, we want keyboards. It's interesting. One of the kids said, we need laptops. We need laptops. We need laptops. iPads are easier to play games on and get addicted to. So that's an interesting point of view. So what Apple did is they came back to
we want computers that are less fun. And
this
appealing.
Is too much fun. I'm addicted.
Another thing that Windows and Google are very, very well optimized towards towards making people happy about.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one reason schools will probably turn off that Android Play Store feature on their laptops, as well as many businesses on their Chromebooks, because they don't.
Just anecdotally, my godkids all have Chromebooks now and Google accounts in school, and they thought it was great when they first got them, and now the parents and the kids just think it's the most horrible. It's
really?
AK-47. It's like Moscow, but like because they can't play. It's no fun to use. It looks ugly and drab because it's Google design stuff.
Yeah.
And they have to use it for work, which is the last thing they want to do.
Well, here's what Maine.
It's a horrible experience.
Here's what Maine did. Apple has actually initiated with the state of Maine a trade-in program, and they are going to take the old iPads and swap them for MacBook Airs.
Awesome.
This is actually an interesting response, and I think Apple's probably cutting them a deal. Because unless Maine somehow has a much more wealthy school system than here in California, which they may well, that's a fairly expensive trade up. But they're going to do it, and schools can also opt to get new iPads. But I think what they're doing is they're offering grade 7 through 12 the option. Very interesting.
I think kids' needs change as they grow older.
Right. You know, it makes sense in high school, doesn't it?
Yeah, our needs change too. You know, my needs and the device that I use for my work change throughout the day. So, you know, I've said before that I like to put my computer down at the end of the day, but I still have work to do. I use my 9.7-inch iPad Pro for that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that it's very convenient. It's very mobile. That's what I like to use at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So everybody's needs change when you're in education. Obviously, I think the needs change as the kids get older and you need to adapt to that.
Yeah. And also anything that the kids are using in junior high is not going to be relevant when they're finishing high school, let alone when they're entering the job force. So getting focused on what specific kind of device they're using is not as important as what that thing can do for them, and making sure that you can actually have enough for these people so that they don't have to wait for 2 hours so that Seth finishes on that one APL keyboard in the computer lab.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's our history. Those are the days we lived.
But I need Fortran next.
I have all these cards. I need to run them through the card reader. Come on. Get off that machine, Seth. All right, so exciting. I for one would very much welcome a new
I've been
MacBook
waiting.
Pro.
I've used both the iPad Pro and I've used the MacBook, but there's some things that, especially video editing, and just there's still some work things that I love the MacBook Pro for. And I've got the pre-force touch MacBook 13-inch right now, and I love it because it's super light, super powerful. So a new version of that machine is something I've been waiting really long time for.
I thought Andy's comment about a MacBook Pro with a MacBook style keyboard was interesting. It didn't sound like Andy liked it. I love the keyboard on the MacBook. Love it.
Yeah.
The Magic keyboard is different, I think, Andy. I think the Magic one you'll like and the other one you won't.
Well, no, I think that the last two keyboard designs that Apple has done, the Magic keyboard and the keyboard on the MacBook, I just think that for my, I'm going to, it's a subjective opinion, but I think they're both terrible. I think that the MacBook keyboard is practical for the sort of device it is, so it's allowable. On the MacBook Pro, though, if that were the keyboard that were built into it, I really hate to say this, but I'm going to be honest. I would either try to limp by with my old MacBook for another couple of years to avoid using it, or I would start to look at Windows machines. I okay, hate
somebody,
that keyboard. It's
can
not,
somebody
it's just
cut
not
a, Andy's feed?
No, and that's fine. It's just it's not a keyboard that I can. You're talking about, and I may be outside the norm. You're talking about somebody who, on a slow day, is only typing for 3 or 4 hours, and on a really full day, is typing for 10 or 11 hours. It's a rare day that I'm not typing several thousand words, or even close to 10,000 words onto a keyboard. And so, when you have something that's hardwired into the device, if that keyboard is terrible, or if I don't like that keyboard, it's game over. I would even rather have a non-retina display and using WordStar as my word processor. if my fingers say, "Why are you doing this to us, Andy? What did we do to make you hate us so much that you're forcing us to use this terrible, terrible keyboard?" You've heard me say this before, so all I'll say is that it would disappoint me if, once again, if I were to win the $500 million lottery, walk into the Apple Store literally with a wheelbarrow full of money, saying, give me your top of the line MacBook. Money is no object. I can pay you as much as $100,000 for your very best laptop. And they hand me something that has a marginal keyboard and not a whole lot of ports. And it's just, they tell me, well, but it's so thin. Saying, this is the best you can give me? This ATM machine style keyboard, this Fisher Price busy time baby's busy box keyboard. Oh. I look, wheelbarrow full of money. I will give you. Nope, that's the best we can do for you. I think the MacBook Pro should be among the best laptops you can possibly buy. Yeah. Style should have almost nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's not style for me. The keyboard on the MacBook, on the 12-inch MacBook, I think is the best keyboard that's ever been released.
Really?
I love that keyboard.
You know that you're atypical.
Well, in many ways, Leo.
But I mean, I don't begrudge you. You could have any, you know, you should have whatever keyboard you want. We're going to take a break, when we come back, this is HP's Windows 10, alas, response to the MacBook. They say thinner. It's not. It's thinner on the edges, but a little bit thicker in the middle, but roughly.
It's thinner on the outside.
Yeah, that's kind of misleading. But all of these are tapered edges, you know, so it's got the thinnest tapered edge.
Somebody cut off Leo's feed, please.
Two and a half. you're going to be all alone soon. Just going to be you and Renee.
You know, it's weird that, I mean, I don't care about the, I use all kinds of keyboards and I don't know, like after 5 minutes, I don't notice a difference anymore.
The only reason I bring this up is because this is same, you know, issues that Apple had to deal with in making the MacBook. In other words, weight and size were critical. It's a little bit bigger because it's a 13-inch screen instead of a 12-inch screen. It's not Retina either, by the way. It's 1080p, and it has much worse battery life. But they had the same issues with keys. They decided they opted to go with the standard kind of wobbly springs, not that the solid springs that Apple did. And the travel's the same, I guess, but I really like this keyboard. I think I prefer it to the MacBook keyboard. It's a little more of a traditional keyboard.
You get used to the wobbliness. Like when I go back, I notice that it's stable.
I don't mind the wobbliness. That's what all keyboards were like, right? But Jim likes the stable keyboard. So
I do like the stable keyboard. Yeah. I think it took a few days to get used to be honest, because when you press down on a key on the new MacBook, the key goes straight down. It doesn't have that wobble.
Right.
And you automatically think, wow, I didn't hit a key there. But when you look, you actually did.
That's so my problem with
days,
it.
I just now I just type like crazy and everything is there. And and like Andy, you know, I type a lot and Renee too, and probably you too, Leo. We type a lot every day, and being comfortable with that keyboard is very
important.
It's a
big deal. Yeah.
So when I go back to the MacBook Pro that I have, and those keys are so small, and by the way, that is the only complaint that I had with the 9.7-inch iPad Pro was the keyboard on the smart cover.
Yeah.
They have lots of room, and I said, why couldn't you make the keys bigger like you do on the MacBook? That's what I wanted, you know, but clearly I'm not like everybody else.
No, but that's nice to have the choice, and I think Apple made a strong case for that keyboard. I find I still make mistakes with it, and that comes from exactly what you did describe the issue, which is I know I've hit a key on the wobbly keys or the keys with bigger travel. That's why some of us like those buckling spring keyboards. They give you strong feedback. Yeah. And on the MacBook, I miss keys because I'm not sure if I hit it or not. And
you got to mean it, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I actually have to pound that keyboard to make, like when I met, because I always screw up the password the first time, right? So then I go boom, 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 boom. It's like the second serve after a net. You've got to make sure that gets in. And I feel like that's why I don't like that keyboard as much. But I think you certainly do get much more used to it. And Lisa loves it. She's like you, Jim.
Yeah.
My wife loves it. In fact, she's on her second MacBook. She wanted the pink one.
See, she's a good person. Smart lady.
Smart woman.
Very smart. Genius.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I'm sure not saying it. And you have to like what you like. And you don't have to defend liking what you like. It would just disappoint me that if they decided to... If you're going to redesign the keyboard to make it flat, I think that you need to give me something as a consumer as a result of that. And if you're making again a MacBook Pro, where I'm willing to have a thicker device. I'm looking to have a device that's a little bit heavier because I want the creature comforts of having this as my desktop device, as my mobile device, as everything. I'm willing to sacrifice what I have to sacrifice for that. If it is not possible for me to buy a MacBook that has a keyboard that I like on it because they use the exact same keyboard key switch technology in all of them, that I think is a problem. I also think that there's signature advantages and signature disadvantages to every single major tech company's design aesthetic. A signature disadvantage of Apple is that we decide what is the best, and if you don't like it, too bad, you're going to have to get used to it. You hear that a lot. That you'll get used to the new keyboard. Well, I don't want to get used to the new keyboard. I want the keyboard that I like.
Right. Well, then you get a MacBook, right? Your MacBook Pro. You get a.
Well, again, that's what I'm saying. If the MacBook Pro decides to use these incredibly low profile keys, just for the sake of consistency across the line, or because they decided that again, nobody ever stood up and cheered at an Apple event saying, "And we made the new MacBook a half a millimeter thinner." You're welcome. That's how what percentage of the crowd is actually like Apple employees when you say that. Okay,
a company's biggest strength is often its biggest weakness too, and it's very hard to balance that.
Right. This is interesting because remember I was talking about ordering this and at the same time as I ordered Lisa's MacBook because they also same size, same form factor. They did, I think, sacrifice the battery size in order to get three Type-C connectors. But then HP did something that just pisses the hell out of me. You can't charge it with any other Type-C charger but HP's. They're obviously checking. Stupid. That's just frustrating as hell. You can charge it in all three ports, but it has to be an HP charger. And the MacBook, I can use any Type-C charger with. That's fine. The other thing they did, which I do like, is these two extra ports support Thunderbolt 3, and I'm getting a lot of speed out of the Thunderbolt 3. It's nice. Not nearly as fast as the internal SSD. That's super fast. That's an NVMe SSD. So if you can live with Windows 10, it's a nice design. I mean, it's very MacBooky, which is interesting to me. They obviously see that as a design to emulate. Let's take a break. We want to talk more. Jim Dalrymple's here from Loop Insight, and I know there's a big party coming up with Jim and Renee, and they'll tell you about that in a second. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Anako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by... I love the name of this company, the Ministry of Supply. It's very 1984. Maybe that's why Mac people should love it. What they're saying is, and I think this fits the geek in all of us, clothing should be designed for functionality. It should be smart. It should be designed for the needs of a body in motion, not for some static mannequin. And this is the Ministry of Supply, created out of MIT. It's a performance professional menswear company. They make polished business clothes that are engineered by MIT-trained engineers. So it's interesting use of fabrics, for instance. They choose fabrics that'll wick the sweat away from your body, that'll regulate your body temperature, keeping it from getting too hot or too cold. They move freely. I got the Ministry of Supply shorts. Actually, I bought them before they started advertising here, and I love them because they fit. They don't use buttons. They don't use they use this unique kind of attachment that it really is great. It took me a little while to figure out because I didn't go to MIT. But once I figured it out, I love it. They never come loose. Take a look at the Aviator 2 suit. You're seeing that on the left if you're watching the screen. Moss co-founder Gihan, they call themselves Moss, Ministry Supply, broke the Guinness World Record for the fastest half marathon wearing a suit. He ran it in the Aviator 2. It was, and just to show that it is a suit that looks great at a business meeting, but is comfortable enough to run a marathon. And it was designed around the human body in motion instead of woven fabric. It uses something called warp knit. I've never heard of this. It's extremely lightweight, very flexible. I bought an Aviator 2 blazer too, which I love. It's perfect for travel. This is what I got both the shorts and the suit for, is travel, because it keeps its shape, it keeps its structure even while it's allowing you to move around. They have the new traditional dress collar shirt. So if you're expected to wear a nice dress collar shirt, temperature regulating phase change materials. What? It's a NASA invention. It stores and releases body heat based on surrounding climate. You're basically wearing a space suit.
It makes me want to try it.
Doesn't it? Is that not awesome?
Yeah.
We'll get you some. We'll send you some, Jim. Laser cut ventilation at the arms, underarms, to keep the air flowing. It's a dress shirt that looks and feels like a traditional dress shirt, but it is state-of-the-art modern. Ministry of Supply. Look at that. I mean, that is a beautiful shirt. I think that's a gorgeous-looking shirt. Here, show my the one I'm holding here real quick. I got it here. You got the over-the-shoulder shot? I just want people to see it in real life. There we go. These are gorgeous shirts. You'd be happy to wear. This is the Gemini. Laser-cut underarm venting, laser-cut bonded construction, phase-change materials, and hydrophobic and hydrophilic fibers for moisture wicking. I guess they put the hydrophobic, on the outside and hydrophobic on the inside. I don't know how they do it. It's MIT, man. Don't ask. This is ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak. You're going to get 15% off when you use our offer code on your first purchase. That offer code is MacBreak. Or they have stores in Boston, San Francisco, coming soon to D.C., and you can just go in the store and say, hey, I heard it on MacBreak, and you'll get 15% off your first purchase there, too. Ministry of Supply. This is, they won't let me take this home yet. This is the, no, I'm so excited. We have to keep it for the ads, but this is the sweater I picked.
I was going to say, if you have a shirt as beautiful as that and you're wearing like the Technicolor,
I know,
Peter Max luau shirt.
I know. They won't let me take them home yet.
No, wait, Leo. I saw on Twitter that you have no problem just going shirtless for half the show.
What are you talking? Whatever are you talking about?
Do they have t-shirts?
I don't. Yeah, I think they do. They do. Yes, they do.
Because, you know, I wear t-shirts.
No, so. You would. You know, it's really the theory behind it is kind of like, you have to go to work and you have to wear dressy shirts, yeah, and stuff.
Boom.
But shouldn't they be nice? But yeah, the t-shirts are awesome. We'll get, what, right, would you like there, that?
Right there.
You lost a lot of weight. What size am I going to send you now?
Large.
Large. Not XL.
Got to have room for the beard.
Okay. Got to have, yeah. Well, see, the beard can go under or in because it's hydrophobic and hydrophilic. The core crew. Okay. We're going to get the core crew neck in black large for Jim. Okay. Make a note of that.
Boom.
Boom. Boom.
Can I just, I'll.
What would you like, Andy?
I'll take the core crew neck. That's,
okay, we'll get one for everybody. You want one too, Renee?
Sure. We want to do a matching show one day.
Get us all small.
It's muscle shirt Mac break.
Yeah. Well, Simon Cowell, make sure we all sit like this.
A gun, yeah, show.
Guys. I will say that, like, I discovered, like, engineered fabrics and, like, engineered shirts just, like, a couple,
uh-huh,
months ago.
Uh-huh.
And just the idea of their fabrics that are designed to really work with whatever, right, whatever humidity, whatever temperature is. It's not too – it's, like, in the 60s here today, but it's, like, really, really humid. And I went out for breakfast, and I was wearing a cotton T-shirt that was just, like,
yeah,
like, oh, yeah. It was like 18 pounds heavier, and so I just got this shirt. This is in the Ministry of Supply, but I just got this shirt like in the mail. Like,
there
2 days
new ago. Materials out there that are amazing.
Immediately changed into it out of this T-shirt, and suddenly, oh my god, I'm so, yeah, I don't feel any colder than I was, yeah, like a minute ago. But now for the entire morning, I'm working, and I don't feel as though I'm in Louisiana gigging frogs or something.
I got them for jujitsu because rash guards were so tight all the time, and these, right, let you breathe, and they were much looser and,
right,
nicer.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love this shirt, but it's made in Mexico, and it's very heavy. It's gorgeous. It's from San Miguel de Allende, one of
He's
our viewers.
Mas macho.
Yeah, Winton Churchill sent me 4 or 5 of them. But they're made of very thick cotton, and I don't know how they wear them in Mexico. If it's humid, this thing, yeah, is like absorbing the water. It's like it gets heavier. Yeah. So, yeah, we don't have to wear cotton and wool anymore. We have better. Coming back from the ad now. That was a just a little a word.
The products are great.
Sometimes an ad speaks to our individual pain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I'll be honest. We do, you know, we turn down a lot of advertisers because we say our audience wouldn't be interested. But so we're always looking for advertisers. This is kind of the old-fashioned way of it. Instead of doing a lot of like snooping on you and figuring out what you're interested in, we just do such narrow programming that we kind of know you'd be interested in this. So we try to pick stuff that you'd be interested in. Yeah.
So Gary Sullivan,
yes,
of Ottumwa, Iowa. This next
this
ad
one's
is
for
you.
Have
you ever noticed that not all places will make pizza that have exactly the right amount of ground beef? Well, Gary.
Did you read Marco's – I know you all read Marco's blog post. If Google's right about AI, that's a problem for Apple. Now, he didn't say it's going to be. He said there's a potential issue. Apple, he likened to BlackBerry right before the iPhone came out. Google's been working hard on machine learning for a decade now and has certain advantages there. For one, they're willing to mine your data to get better at machine language. Apple, of course, is much more reluctant to do that. What did you think of the article, Renee?
I wrote a hot take on it this morning, of course, because I had to. I feel such sympathy for Marco because he takes what is in essence a community discussion and he lasers down to it, and then in the most sensational way possible, all the usual suspects link to it and try to incite riots based on it. So I think his core point is highly interesting. BlackBerry is a hard example to make. It's a good one because they went from being the major smartphone player to not being the major smartphone player, but the reasons were very specific to BlackBerry. Like they really thought to the core of their being that hardware keyboards and data compression were the keys to success in the future. They never saw multi-touch and mobile broadband coming. They wasted a year making playbooks that nobody wanted and in essence stopped making phones. And then they had a really hard time trying to make QNX into a consumer-friendly operating system. And Apple faces absolutely none of those problems. Also, Apple has been doing machine learning for half a decade and more. Apple has a whole bunch of people that work on machine learning. So whether they're behind or not is a function of how you if you believe that Google is doing machine learning in a way that not only Apple can't do, but in a way that will be so fundamentally better that Apple, and this is where the BlackBerry analogy works, that Apple falls into irrelevancy, and their BBM is maybe a better example because WhatsApp just decimated BBM. And maybe Windows Mobile is a good example because Microsoft still has tons of money. They're very successful, but nobody cares about Microsoft on mobile anymore. It fell off the radar. And it's not that people stopped buying BlackBerries. They stopped even thinking about buying BlackBerries, which is a much worse problem to have. So I think that if it's true that Apple is far behind in machine learning, and there's some things to suggest that, but there's some things like, again, I can go to my Apple TV and in French ask it to play me an English movie, and it does. And that's very rare. And they can do that in Mandarin or Hebrew and a whole bunch of different languages. Apple is actually ahead in some areas, especially compared to a company like Amazon. We have a skewed perspective of that. So I think there's absolutely points of caution and there's absolutely merit to that argument. But I also think it's important that, for example, I don't want Google mining my data. And as a consumer, even if I have a lesser service, to many people, the convenience will far outweigh any privacy or security concerns. They just won't care. They just want the awesome technology. But if there are people, just like keyboards, if there are people who want that level of privacy, I think it's really important that a company like Apple or somebody provides them with an alternative. And I'll say, I'm willing to give up a little bit of this for a lot of that, and I'm happy that I have that option. Wow, that was a lot of talks, Leo.
No. No, options are good and options are important. I think Apple has the ability to do whatever it is they want to do. And if they had bet wrong on the importance of features like what Google were demonstrating at Google I/O last week, they can either take something that is that has been a back burner project and suddenly give it next keynote relevance or next keynote funding and personnel, or they can just buy it. And it will be like Google Maps, where it's going to be a tough public flogging for a couple of years, but eventually they'll get to where they need to go. And they've got plenty of time to figure that out. The bigger problem would be if they are philosophically not willing to make products that are and services that are relevant to people. If they are so fixated on I'll pull this out only because it's continuity, but said, no, we don't think that people care about full travel keyboards. I'll cross the line. I think they want that really cool styling that we can get from this. And people are saying, well, no, if we are given, we like our Macs more than we hate your keyboards. That's the only reason why we're doing that. It's going to be interesting as I was watching the Google I/O keynote, which I thought was one of the strongest tech keynotes in the past 3 or 4 years. I was thinking about what Apple could introduce at WWDC and what they could introduce in the next iPhone, and thinking that Google's keynote was full of, here are practical ways in which we're going to make your phone a lot easier to use. Here are problems that you face every single day that we are solving, not with new hardware, but by simply giving the next free update to your operating system. If Apple's next keynote is, and we now have this new LED strip that's going to be touch sensitive, that if programmers support it, we'll let people do this. Force touch is wonderful, but it's not essential, and it requires you to buy a new piece of hardware. My new MacBook that I bought a few months ago, of course, has force touch. I like that it's there. I like the technology behind it. But the thing is, I don't really use force touch. It's not really helping me out. If Apple's road is still that we're going to make the really nice high-end, premium, high markup devices, and all of the really cool stuff that we do involves your buying new hardware, and it won't be these magical things that make you instantly wish, oh my God, I wish my phone had force touch so I could press a little bit harder and get a pop-up menu. You know, if they're not willing to respond to that, I'm not saying Apple is doomed, but that would be a point in which Apple has to decide, do you want to continue to be Apple, or are you going to be content to be Bang & Olufsen, a company that is very, very respected, very, very profitable, I believe it's very profitable, big stuff that's highly respected, but it's still, you don't know any, but not terribly relevant to what most people want in terms of that kind of consumer hardware.
Is that, you know, in a way, though, couldn't this be an opportunity for Apple to say, look, we protect your privacy, we're not going to mine your data. Okay, yes, no. That means Siri will never be as good as OK Google in some respects, but wouldn't you prefer to use a more private platform?
Yeah, but how, the thing is, Apple, you can't, I think it would be a mistake to behave as though Google is the only company that's keeping an eye on your data. Your car is collecting your data. Your cable box, Netflix, is collecting your data. Every website that you hit is collecting your data. When you take advantage of the two for one sale on potato chips on Memorial Day with your discount card at the market, your market is collecting your data. My position on this is the same as it's always been. I think that Google offers you a transaction in which they're willing to collect data from you on the basis that we will keep that data secure and private. We will never sell information about you. We will simply use that what we learn about you to steer better ads towards you. So an outside advertiser will never be able to find out more about me, Andy Iannocco, but they will be able to find out. They will be able to make sure that an ad intended for a nerd in their mid 40s who wears glasses and wears hats a lot will get the hat ad. And in exchange for that, they will get a suite of services that the user can either find useful or not find useful. And on that basis, I feel as though for me, I can only speak for me, I think they give a very, very valuable suite of services. One of the things that the stuff that I saw last week at Google I/O, point after point after point after point, I was thinking, oh, I wish my phone could do that right now. Oh, I wish my phone could. Oh, I wish I had that device. Oh, wouldn't it be great if my device did that? I can't wait for Android N to come out. And for me, that is a good transaction. What I don't like is people who aren't as sensible as Renee, who say that, you know, when with Google, you are the product. With Apple, they're interested in only selling phones. Like, well, yeah, they're interested in they're optimized towards making sure that they will make a phone that is worth the markup that they have to charge for it. They're interested in selling laptops that are worth the markup that they have to charge for it. They're not interested in, again, selling a $300 notebook that is going to be as useful as at least 80-85% of the notebooks that are on the market today. So it's a transaction. You have to make an informed decision, but I don't think that anybody's foolish for making the decision that they would much rather give all that personal data to Google if it means that I get every advantage of Google Now and I get every advantage I have on my Android Wear watch that would not be possible with an Apple device.
Jim, what do you think?
Wow.
I mean, you have it. You're an iPhone user. You know, Andy's an Android user. Do you look over at that side and with envy, or as Andy does, with anticipation about things that are going to come to your phone?
The one thing that I did find was pretty cool about Google I/O was that it could identify what was happening in a picture. So if you sent a graduation picture, it would come up with recommended responses like, oh, congratulations, or you look great. You know, I don't know what would happen if you sent, you know, a picture of you just waking up in the morning. Would it come back and say you look horrible, or
toothbrush, please?
but it did seem to know, based on the content of the picture, what a recommended response should be. That's kind of cool. But, you know, I think it's important that we split the conversation of especially with this the new AI stuff, is that there's the consumer level and the tech level. I mean, from a tech point, if we split the tech people out, we're all impressed with new things that can be done. But if you look at a consumer, they look at it differently than what we do. You know, they want convenience. And that's why iTunes was so successful, because it was just convenient. You could go in and just buy a song. You hear a song, buy, done. It's, you own it now. It's yours. And I think with Siri and with what Google's doing, having so many iPhones out there, I think Apple does have a responsibility to make Siri better, and I think that they will. But just being able to press that button on your iPhone and use that service is good enough for a lot of people. So I think there are two different ways to look at this whole argument between, you know, Google and Alexa and Siri, and, you know, a lot of it has to do with what's good for the consumer and what we look at as a tech community.
There's a lot of it.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is, yeah, I had a very different reaction to Google I/O because, and you know, to Jim's point, I'm a techie. I thought the technology that they showed was far better than how they explained it. Like, for example, when they were talking about Allo, they basically said it could do sequential inference, which we've all had for 5 years, but it does so much more than that. And that wasn't really, you know, fully expanded upon. The assistant stuff, there's a whole ton of assistant stuff, and this does a lot of unique stuff, but it was given a very, very low level explanation. And I met some Google engineer friends afterwards, because they were all in South Bay the same time I was, because Google had the actual event in South Bay for the first time. And we were sort of joking around, is what does this really mean when we have this sort of bot integration? So for example, if I message Jim and Jim's like, you know, I like Rennie, but you know, I'm kind of busy now and he's annoying me. Bot, why don't you handle him for a while? Instead of me picking those predicted responses, you just pick the right ones. Now make sure you don't add any calendar appointments.
They did not offer that, by the way, as a feature.
But that would
although
be so
a few
great.
People like, wanted it.
Like mother-in-law is texting.
And then do you know who you're talking to? Is it Jim or is it his bot?
I mean, some people ask like entertain mother-in-law for 10 minutes and it just goes and does it. But then
Inbox does this already, by the way, Google's email inbox, and it does a surprisingly good and nuanced job of giving the right response, one that even sounds like it's from my own voice. And I gather it's kind of, and by the way, how does it do that? Reading your email. And by doing that, it can come up with something that I think you might have nailed it, Renee. That's something they could conceivably offer.
And then, you know, after a minute, mother-in-law is like, oh, he's kind of boring, but I don't want to be rude to him. So she presses the button. And then there's two bots talking in the forest and no one needs to hear them.
For the rest of for 100 years.
It'll become Microsoft Tay, too. It'll just be beautiful. Yeah.
Well, I saw a lot of really good practical, the sort of stuff. I think some of the best technology is the sort of stuff where you are in a group of people and you have different phones or different devices, or you're visiting someone else's house who have different gear, and you notice them doing things that you wish you could do with your own stuff. And Allo is definitely in that category, because it's stuff like having a chat with, how many times have you had a chat with people who you're trying to figure out where to go out for dinner? And if just the ability to bring in a bot into the chat and ask, well, what restaurants that are near us that are going to be open after 10? And the bot comes back conversationally. Well, we have this, 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 and that. Do any of those have a really, really good beer list with a lot of like local beers? Well, this one and this one. Oh, great. What are the prices of place B? And so, well, the price B, typical entree is about $12, $18. Oh, great. Can you make us a reservation? And then not only is it making a reservation, but it's also allowing Open Table or whatever other thing to push without my having the Open Table app or the Yelp app or anything on the device to push from Google Play, just that bit of Android code that gives me a really rich environment for placing a reservation at that place and time. That's the sort of stuff that you don't have to know how good the engine in this car is to understand that it runs better than my 1999 my 1999 Buick Electra or whatever I'm doing. They're showing off a lot of things that were very, very practical in that way. And so I think that that's the sort of stuff that I would like to see Apple start to show off. I think the last two or three keynotes, there haven't been as many really wow moments like that. Even with the Apple Watch, where they're showing off, here is this new thing, and it is a platform for apps, and it will track your stuff, and we'll do this, and we'll do your activity. But they weren't showing the, here is a problem that you're having that this watch will then solve for you. The iPad Pro is a little bit better, but I mean, we're talking about a big, broad hardware platform, so that's kind of hard to do. I really hope that when they show off the next version of iOS and the same version of macOS, they really can show stuff with, say, Siri, where I can solve a problem really, really quickly and really, really accurately. Again, watching I/O, so many points. Just the ability to do, how many times have I been like out in public, whether I'm on the subway or just on the street corner, and I want to be able to say, like, hey, Shlomo, are there any drugstores near me right now that have that unguent for that rash that I haven't been able to get rid of? You know, and you don't want to say stuff like that, even if it's, or even like appointments, like schedule a meeting for next Thursday. The ability to simply in the Allo window, just simply type schedule an appointment for next Thursday with this person, that person, or that other person, and have access to that natural language interface without having to speak it aloud. Just that alone, I think, well, that's the feature that I'm going to use a lot.
Yeah,
and that's also that's also going to be a feature that people are going to be able to use on iOS because it's going to be multi-platform. So, like I said, I want to make sure that Apple is not losing sight of, while they're trying to make their $3,000 laptop that's already too big to put in a back pocket 1 millimeter thinner, you know, and they think that that's a really wonderful thing that everyone's going to respond to. And I know that it drives them and it drives their curiosity. But I want to make sure that as an iPad user, as a Mac user, they're making these sort of announcements that get me really, really excited about using my iPad in September and October when the next version of the operating system comes out.
Jim, I'm sorry, Andy, you're forgetting that last WWDC, they gave me the ability to say, hey, Siri, play the Glee version of Smooth Criminal. And it just does. It just does.
Okay, well, that's...
Problem solved.
Okay. if you were saying the Alien Ant Farm version of
Smooth, I did that Criminal, one already.
I'd be with
so
you.
Now I've moved on to Glee. I'm trying to duck Jim punching me now. I'm trying to listen.
Anything that makes it easier to get to either Prince or Michael Jackson, I'll have to say that is a big step forward.
One thing that Apple did, Google announced that nobody really picked up on, but I thought was completely reinventing the concept of a computer and a smartphone ties into this machine learning. It was at the very end of the keynote, they announced something called Instant Apps. And the theory was you don't have to have an app installed. And I think it works best with this, you know, voice interface. But you ask for something. Let's say you're the scenario is you say, okay, Google, what are some good Italian restaurants around here? They give you a list. You say, okay, make a reservation at Bocelli's. This is the one they use as an example. For 2 tomorrow at 6 p.m. And then it comes back and says, I've loaded a little bit of – wouldn't say this, but this would happen. I've loaded a little bit of Open Table enough to see that there's a there's a table for 2 available at 7 p.m. Would you like that table? You say yes. You never had Open Table installed. But what the phone is going to start to do is start loading enough of – of course, developers have to cooperate by modularizing their applications. I think all will. Loading enough of an app to run that particular function. And then at some point, say, if you'd like the full app, here, download it. But this is why I think this is an interesting evolution.
Well, why that instead of web pages, Leo? Like, why not go to the web for that?
Well, if you could do it on the web, fine. But apps, there's a lot of stuff apps do. But let me finish, and then I'd love to hear what you think. The idea being, right now, apps are fairly siloed. You have to install an app. You have to install TripIt to get TripIt functionality. You have to install a Compass app to get Compass functionality, whatever. And it's a little silo. You launch it. It's in there, and then you exit out of it, and it does that. I love this idea that the phone, and in some ways these bots, these machine language AIs, are your representative, your ombudsman. They know what you want to do because you've told them or you'd indicated somehow. They go out and get the help they need to get it done. You never have to worry about having that app. That's not – and suddenly what happens is I no longer have apps. I have a relationship with a bot or with my phone, and I let it do the job. To me, that is next generation thinking. And I think Apple could – there's nothing that stops Apple from doing this, by the way. But I think this is a very interesting way to think of these devices and much, much more modern. Okay, go ahead.
So there's two things here that I really, really like. One is that this feels like that moment when Facebook realized they couldn't just use a web view anymore and they had to go native. Right. And when you look at Android apps running on Chrome and you look at app slices basically being downloaded on the fly, I think it shows that, you know, while everyone keeps saying web performance is coming, it's always never quite arriving. And this, I think, is a great way to sort of get the best of both worlds. And it sort of ties into why I loved extensibility when Apple announced that 2 years ago, because it essentially does to apps what happened to the web. We used to go to websites, and then suddenly we had APIs and web services. And you can have a website that accesses the Drupal API without, or an app that accesses it, and you're no longer bound to one sort of binary blob. And extensibility did that on iOS. Now, instead of launching pCalc, I pull down Notification Center, and it's there. Instead of launching the Pinterest app, yeah. I just open the share sheet, and it's there. And
Apple has started making moves in those directions, haven't they? Yeah.
On-demand resources, it downloads slices and assets as you need them. And to me, I think you're exactly right. This is the next generation. I don't know how developers are going to react because they're used to owning real estate. Like, this is my brand. This is my product. Right. And now you might never see it because it's totally unbundled features.
It depends what the developer sells. So if the developer is all about selling an app, you're right.
Yeah.
And that's why they had a little SOP to developers. Oh, and don't worry, we're going to plug your app. But if, for instance, we have a Twit app, but the point end game for me is not a Twit app. The end game for me is that you listen to our shows. So I don't mind at all if you don't need an app. I would love it if the phone would just intermediate and you could say, as you can, by the way, with the Echo, hey, play Mac Break Weekly, and it would. That's how it should be.
And for this, it's just a while ago, Ben Evans said, like, I don't know what an app is going to look like 5 years from now. And I think this shows that he was exactly right. 2-3 years from now, what does downloading an app on your smartphone mean? Probably something really, really different than we thought it would.
Yeah. Jim, what do you think?
Well, I have to agree. I mean, you know, what we expect from our phones now and what we expect in 3 years is completely different than what we expected in 2007 when the iPhone first came out. I mean, we really expect the devices that we have to be very intelligent. And I don't think that we expected that 5 years ago. We expected them to respond to our input. Now we kind of want them to know what we want and to be a step ahead of us. And, you know, in a lot of respects, they're getting there.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice step. Certainly myself, keep complaining about how the Springboard is just such a stagnant piece of software on iOS that it's really antique, it's old fashioned. We need something that's a little bit more muscular, that's a little bit more useful. But we really are entering into a phase where the act of explicitly launching an app is going to indicate a failure point in the device.
Wow.
Where
I love
the idea of the idea that I should be spending most of my time now in an app like Allo, for instance. It's a chat, it's a messaging app. But the idea that I will simply, here's what I want you to do, Mr. or Mrs. Device, and it will just simply fetch the code that it needs from whatever app that's installed to make that happen, including a very, very rich GUI interface to make that happen. I will never have to actually install to actually launch Omni Outliner to just simply send a piece of data or get a piece of data out from that.
Yeah, now the Omni group may not be super happy about that.
Well, I'll still have
they
to.
They can have a bot.
Well, Well, what if? I already own it, but now I'm using it a lot more. Now this is because it's everywhere that I want it to be. It's not something that I'm willing to do without, even when they charge $40 for as they should for the next major update. Or even it's even more interesting when you're talking about content that's on the web, where I don't really I probably have knocked at least 300 calories a month off of my goal by saying no, don't download this app. Just tape me to the web page with the information on it, because I really don't want to have to install Yelp just to find out what a whole bunch of bots have spammed the comments thread on a restaurant say. But if I'm just getting a web results off on my phone or getting a notification, and Yelp can simply push out, here is a much better view of that restaurant and the data that we have on it, maybe I would press a deeper button after a few minutes to realize that, gee, I'm actually getting a lot of help from Yelp as opposed to a web page. Maybe it is worth my installing that. So it's the difference between, do you want someone to maybe download your music illegally for a while, but then become such a fan that they are paying $130 for tickets to your concerts? Or do you want them to simply never know you exist and never put any money into your pockets whatsoever?
Yeah.
Amazing how this changes over time. Like previously it was like, oh great, I have Peacock on my phone, and I was like, I can't be bothered to launch it, I'm just going to Notification Center. Or wow, I can get apps on my phone. It's like, oh, I gotta download an app and install it, and then remember I gotta delete it. Like all these things that were miracles just a few years ago are now tedious chores to watch.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of hurdles in this. It's you know, there's the issue of bandwidth and time, and you know, you don't right now on the Apple Watch it takes forever if the app's not on the watch. You don't want a situation where you see that spinning icon and, oh, yeah, okay, great.
Or even I was roaming the other day. I didn't have an app downloaded and I needed it, and I just couldn't get a bar and I couldn't download. And I'm watching that thing tick away, desperate that my battery doesn't run out before I get that app.
Hey, didn't Apple say that by June 1st, all apps would have to be native to the watch? Is that not right?
I believe so.
So what if, are a lot of apps updating? What's going on? Because that's only about a week away.
The last update did something, because like there's new animations on the app launcher, and apps launch faster than they did before. So it was just a point increase, but it seems like there's definitely stuff going on there. Yeah.
And did they imply when we would be getting a new Watch OS, or have they said anything?
It should be dubbed up. I mean, OS, Watch OS 3, Apple TV OS 10, iOS 10, and OS 10.
All June.
Yeah, again, like OS 10, 10.12, Mac OS 12, Mac OS 11, don't know, but interesting.
Will it be El Capitan, or are we going to move to another monument?
Another.
New monument?
A different one, yep.
What do you think, Jim? You hear anything?
Beard.
OS 10 beard. Jim's beard.
Apple does have a lot to make up for. I would not blame them whatsoever.
How about Awani? OS 10 on one. No, that's a brand name, right? That's not
Where is the Heineken main brewery at? Which town is that?
They're relocating
to Amstel. All right. June, when? June 10th? When is WWDC?
June 13th. Is 13th. The keynote.
When is the big party, more importantly?
Big party is the 13th as well. So every year for the last, this is the sixth year, I put on a free party for developers, and it's always called the Beard Bash for obvious reasons. I named a party after my beard. So we have this year we're doing it with Rene and Imore. We have people from all over the world, developers from all over coming to the party, and we're doing two bands this year, you know, a local San Francisco band that plays hard rock, and a band that's founded by a couple of Apple or not work at Apple, but a couple of developers and designers called Airplane Mode.
I know, that's exciting. Renee's been talking about them for ages.
Yeah, it's going to be a great party, you know. We serve free beer and wine for the night, and you know, you need
free Heineken and wine.
Really? Do you have a deal with Heine?
No. I wish.
He just won't let another beers in the building.
Okay.
It's just one of those, I just, I always want to have a night where developers can get, just come and listen to good music and, you know, have a good time. And
it's a good location. You know, it's right there. You won't have to walk far.
Yeah.
Right by the Blue Bottle there on Jesse Street.
Yeah.
You can have some coffee to stay up later and party harder.
But you got to RSVP, right?
Well, yeah, the RSVP list went out last week. It's sold out. Well, sold out. The tickets are free.
Oh, so it's waiting list now.
Now it's waiting list. Oh, but yeah, it sold out in a few hours. And, you know, it's going to be a great time.
How many people can you get in the mezzanine there?
Well, you can fit 700 or better in there.
And you sold out. Wow.
Yeah, in no time.
That's awesome, Jim.
Yeah, quicker than what I thought.
So the power of the beard.
We're really happy about
it. It's a dub institution. I mean, response. Apple grabbed Beer Bash first, so Jim had two options, and they took one of them, so he went with Beard Bash. And I think it worked. I think got the better part of that deal.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So the keynote is that you were smart. You have the party not the morning, not the night before the keynote, but the night of the keynote.
Of the keynote,
That way nobody has to get up early.
Yeah, everybody will be still talking about the keynote, and you know, come in, have a drink, and party. You know, rock out to the bands.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's not too late. Just go to loopinsight.com and get on that waiting list and cross your fingers that somebody gets sick and dies because. I know that's rude.
Wow.
That's mean, but.
Pray for the merciful release of death.
Well, the keynote is actually at the Bill Graham Center this year, so it's going to just be the developers who can find their way back.
Wow.
Don't have to worry about.
Oh, it's not at Moscone. It's at Bill Graham.
No, the conference is at Moscone, but the keynote is at
Bill
Graham.
It's not so far. It's all within a few blocks. Just watch out for the homeless people on your way to Bill Graham.
Right.
Keynote at 10 a.m.?
Yes.
Live stream?
I think so. Yeah. They've already said live stream.
All right. So, Carson, make a note of that. We're going to have to... come in. Is that a Tuesday or a Wednesday?
And Apple's live streaming these days is really solid. They must have done something amazing.
They fired the people that screwed up last time. And
I mean, the show last year, they broadcast all the sessions from Presidio Live, and that was a miraculous piece of business.
So June 13th is a Monday, as I can tell from my GCal. So Monday, we will put off triangulation that day. And actually, I think we can run that. That's when we'll run the Scott McNeely interview. What do you say? We're doing a Scott McNeely interview next week in the early morning hours. How early do I have to come in to talk to Scott? What?
9 o'clock.
Well, Leo, we finally have the thin client. It's the perfect time to talk to him.
Leo, just have your bot ask him the question.
Yeah, there you go. Scott, I have a question for you. So, we'll run. That's what we'll do is we'll run that, and then we'll do our live coverage with the keynote. I am excited. I always get excited for these because, frankly, I'm almost more interested in a new MacBook than I am in a new iPad or a new iPhone.
Software.
Yeah, and software, and I love to see what they do with OS X and what the landmark they'll name it after.
Yeah.
Is there anything more in Yosemite that's like Half Dome? Half Dome?
Half Dome.
That's kind of a bad name for an operating system.
Or if they shift to macOS, do they still need a code name? Because they don't have code names for OS X or tvOS.
I mean, maybe they're not doing anything, which is going to be, it's going to be macOS.
I think they will because they started it so recently, but it will be interesting to see how they manage that.
Isn't that, though, the rumor that they're going to say, hey, by the way, now it's not OS X, it's macOS?
Yeah.
Yep. And they just call it macOS 2016. You know what? This is the year. This is it. They're going to say macOS 2016. That's it.
It's actually funny because originally they had these code names named after big cats that were internal names. Right. And then marketing goes, those are great. Let's use those in the product. And they're like, oh, now we got to think of new code names. Great. Thanks. Yeah, we're going to use wines. Oh, we ran out of wines. Let's use apples. And then it's like, oh, we're going to use landmarks publicly. And it just becomes so confusing when like iOS 9 is so simple.
But what do you make wallpaper if it's just called macOS 2016? What's the wallpaper look like?
Beard.
Big calendar.
Beard. Apple's going to introduce a new wallpaper and they think it's the best wallpaper ever shipped. We've prepared a video.
Half Dome is too much like, somebody in the chat room said, it's too much like Half Done. So I think probably that will not. I think, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, put that on your bingo card for WWC keynote. It's going to be macOS 2016. Why not?
Well, at least they'll do, they can't do worse than what Google did by saying that we know that you're used to us naming it's to Android N. We know you're used to us naming it after a candy or a dessert, but we haven't decided what it's going to be yet. So just send us suggestions. Like, who cares? Just like
say, you can vote in the American Idol app right now.
Don't say anything. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to tell you why I got naked on Sunday in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Andy Anacos here from the Chicago Sun-Times, Jim Dalrymple, loopinsight.com. That's where you can go, by the way, to get on the waiting list for the Beard Bash. And Renee Ritchie from iMore.
Take off our shirts now, Leo, or do we wait?
Hold on a second. Get your foliage ready.
Okay.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's about time. Have you bought a house or refinanced lately? It is. We bought our house a couple of years ago. The paperwork was insane. And we were on a cruise. It took so long. We were ending up being on a cruise. We were faxing, hand signing and faxing documents. This is in the 21st century, ladies and gentlemen, to our mortgage broker. I am so pleased. Next time it'll be Rocket Mortgage for me. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast. It's powerful, and this is the best part, completely online. Completely online. No more stacks of files and paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can, you know, just push a button, share your bank statements, your pay stubs, and you do it online. And in fact, you can even do it on your iPad or your iPhone. That's amazing. Get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. It's on fleek. It's so neat. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do it all on your phone or your tablet. It's quick. It's online. I mean, what more could you want? If you're looking to refi or if you're about to buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today. It's by Quicken Loans, so you can find it at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. By the way, little real estate tip. If you're going to go out and start looking for a house, get pre-qualified at Rocket Mortgage right now. Because that makes you a much more, in this marketplace, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country, but here in California, if you're not pre-qualified, you don't even have a chance of getting that house. It's really a seller's market. Quickenloans.com/MacBreak, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Sorry, Renee. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Go to quickenloans.com/MacBreak, and we thank them so much for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Every time I say Rocket Mortgage, I want to go. Okay. Has anybody, did Renee, when you were in town like last week, right?
Yeah, Jim and I hit up the preview event on Thursday.
So you did. You both went to the new Apple store in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yes.
Instead of a Genius Bar, it is a Genius Grove.
It's calming and soothing and zen, and there's no elbowing.
It almost feels like they don't want to sell products. They just want you to just kind of hang out.
The most insightful comment, Angela Ahrens came up and she spoke. And I know
you got to see her and Johnny. I'm so jealous.
So cool. I'll get that. What she said was, because there's always like, why doesn't Apple have Angela Ahrens talking at all their events? Oh, they're evil. But she says, like, you know, I really don't. It's like Johnny Ive. I really don't like this talking thing, but I'm super passionate about this. Pass me some water. I'm going to try to get through this. And then she said, you know, the online has taken over so much. People can get build to order options. They're shipped right to them. Right. They can get help from Apple support on Twitter. So they had to redefine why people would go to an Apple store, and they realized it's not for like little how-tos or small software fixes, but it's to get actual help with hardware. And they want you to be able to sit down and not be elbowed off the side of a bar or have to stand there and work with the Genius, not be across from them.
Right.
So they redesigned it so it would have a whole different, a much more hardware focus than it previously did.
So the front door, this is, by the way, just off Union Square. It's where the old Nike store was next to the Hyatt. The front door is 24-foot tall, panes. 42 I got it dyslexic. Yeah. 42-foot tall glass panels that slide back so that you can be kind of inside and outside.
Drive right in.
Yeah. They have five departments, not just the Genius Grove. And you think I'm making that up, but that's actually what they call it, the Genius Grove, the Avenue, the Forum, the Plaza, and the Boardroom. Oh, my. Oh, my. Photovoltaic cells on the building's roof, so it's 100% renewable energy. There are apparently people in kilts.
Well, Well, they have a new position there called the Creative Pro. So what they did is with the accessories, they divided them up into four sections. So you have photography, music, creativity, and apps. And they want you to actually pick the stuff up and try it. And if it's your first time there and you don't know how music works with your devices, or you don't know much about photography, they'll show you all the basics you need to get started. But they'll also start doing things like Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro. I think the number they gave is they're going to devote 20% of all this real estate just for educational programs and educational outreach.
Yeah.
Starting from school level all the way up to pro level.
You know, if Alex Lindsay were here, he would say, this is what I predicted, is that stores are going to go away as we do more and more shopping online. The idea of a store, is just as you said, has to be reinvented. And it's not going to be somewhere you go to shop, more somewhere you go to have an experience of the brand.
Yeah,
and get human interaction. And so this picture is the Genius Grove. It's not exactly a grove. They got a few potted plants. But I do like the idea that instead of the genius being on the other side of the table kind of lording it over you, because they are, at least in San Francisco, they were on a raised platform looking down.
Oh, you didn't take a backup first, really?
I'm sorry. They're next to you, so you can elbow them if they say something snarky.
Oh, and tons of MacBreak fans, staff and people there alike during the event, Leo.
Oh, they probably didn't appreciate my snark about the news store. I thought it was like an Herbal Essence commercial. That's why I had to strip down.
Wow.
Jim and I stayed clothed throughout. I can attest to
that. I haven't been there yet. And actually, as I look at these pictures, it does look more like just a regular store. But with some nice, you know, San Francisco weather isn't that good all the time. So those doors may be closed more than half the year.
It's meant to be like the focus is community for this. And what they wanted to be able to do was to open it up so they could have almost like block parties and the store could become part of that square and not just be a sealed off chamber on top of it.
Right. I was a little concerned that it felt almost cult-like. It's clearly designed as a Johnny Ive project. It's like an aluminum cube with glass sides.
And the embedded Apple logo.
Yeah, it's like one of
us. Doesn't glow anymore. It's like a MacBook, and it's space gray.
The Church of Scientology would be happy to have this as their global headquarters.
Gosh, I can't see Leo. I saw the top of his head emerging out of the hole he was digging for himself, but now I don't see him at all.
Yeah, it wasn't that vibe, though. I mean, like, the Apple is, like, Apple's always been, like, Steve Jobs famously said, I don't want to see Apple logos everywhere because it devalues the logo. And it's very much like that inside, is that it's not overwhelmingly Apple. It's overwhelmingly, like, creative. Like, they have people, there's a giant 6K display, and I couldn't see lines on it. It was pretty impressive. And they have, like, images going by there and people playing music. And it really is, it feels like an arts center more than it does, like an Apple cult headquarters.
Yeah, I guess that's what bothers me. And it's because I'm an old school kind of guy. And I think, no, Apple's a computer company. Let's just sell.
It can look like fries. Radio Shack.
It's not a lifestyle. It's a freaking computer company.
Well, and the part out back, you know, where they have like a little park that they built, you know, that's they're going to have little concerts, acoustic things back there. Wi-Fi enabled. You know, people can go there and meet and sit.
I'm just jealous. I mean, look at. I'm just a podcast. What did I build? A crazy thing, right?
So podcast is important to them. Yeah. They're going to show those off too.
Are they? Oh, love the new Apple store.
love
it.
Backpedal.
Yep. Well, they have that area to bring people in. Like, they're going to bring in experts and podcasters and developers and all those. And they have that plaza there so that you can sit on those little box and round chairs. And they can have small groups or large groups. And they can go through, like, how to get started with podcasting, what podcasts are great. There's going to be a lot of, like, again, 20% education stuff, which is pretty cool.
And I don't think anybody with a giant sledgehammer will come running down the aisle and throw it at that giant screen. I certainly hope not.
Jim just wanted the he kept saying, can you put the hockey game on? Just put the hockey game on.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
You got to say that, like, it's in Union Square. So this is like one of the most expensive retail areas and one of the most expensive.
Oh, around the corner is Tiffany, Saks Fifth Avenue. Yeah, yeah.
But Tiffany and Saks are not like inviting you to just walk in and like use their Wi-Fi and sit under a tree and maybe attend like a public event.
That was my other thought. Doesn't Apple know about the homeless problem in San Francisco?
They have the best security of any Apple store ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Countdown to the first really, really ugly video of someone saying, yeah, we're not going to let you pitch a tent in here. I'm sorry.
But it's the Grove.
Oh my God, hammocks. I didn't even think about that. People are going to come in with hammocks.
No one would deny, though, that this is really Apple saying we are a lifestyle brand.
Well, right? they get to do what they like to do. And there's anybody who's been to even like an Apple store in a mall knows that it is crowded. It's right. It starts to become an unpleasant experience. You start to dread the fact that you know that I'm having problems syncing something to my phone, or I don't understand how this works. But the last thing I would want to do is go to an Apple store. So not only does it allow them to express their love of design, but also to solve the problem of saying flip that around and say that when they get to build these flagship stores, to say that I actually want to go to the Apple store. There's so many times where I'm in a different city and there's some stuff I need to get done. I'll say, where's the nearest Apple store? That's going to be an okay place to hang out for an hour while I use the Wi-Fi and get things done. I know they're not going to hassle me. And if there's a Chipotle nearby, all the better.
Really? Still eating at Chipotle?
They've got a certain amount of faith. I've never had a problem with Chipotle, and given that there isn't as many crowds there now.
Yeah, easier. The lines are shorter.
It's still like if I want to spend $7 and get what I recognize as like real good food that tastes good, that I can have served in less than, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's Chipotle still on the list.
I noted that Chipotle is buying ads on NPR podcasts. And I thought, Chipotle, you're talking to the wrong people. Those are not people going to Chipotle. You need to buy ads on Twitter. That's people going to Chipotle. Exactly. Matt Frick, this is who eats at Chipotle, not those NPR hoity-toities.
We are up. The other thing that was like super, super fascinating at this was you did have Angel Aarons there. You did have Johnny Ive there. And they could have very easily said, okay, this year the Genius Bar is going to have a slight angle, or this year the theater is going to have plush seating. But Johnny Ive was pretty, like Angel Aarons spoke about this. She did some remarks, but Johnny was pretty cool about this too. It's like they didn't want to just incrementally improve it. They wanted to do that thing where they say, like, what is the essence of this? And it has a theater now, not because it used to, but because it makes sense given their community approach. It no longer has a Genius Bar. It now has a Genius Grove because the bar no longer made sense given that one guiding principle they wanted. And then they very specifically built out from that.
I think that's actually fair. This is also, did you get to talk to Johnny, or were you just standing there in awe while he opened a bottle of water? Because I saw the picture.
I got to talk to him very, very briefly. It's the second time I've had a chance to talk to him, and both times he sounds exactly like he does on the video. Like every time I've spoken to an Apple executive, they're on, like, you think that they're up there performing, but they speak, and he's always been sort of like, yes, I made a product, but that's only my guess. I need to see how people interact with it before I can understand what it really is, and then I iterate based on that. And from a designer of his, like, he's won more pencil awards than I think most companies put together, and he's still like incredibly humble about what the reaction can be and what his real job is going forward.
He does seem like a very humble guy. I have to say that comes across. Yeah,
really does.
It was 2001. Steve Jobs introduced the first Apple store. I apologize for the quality of the video.
This is our store, and the store is divided into four parts.
John and Yoko in the back.
Quarter of the store has our home section, with great home and education products.
Bondi Blue IMAX.
And our pro section, with all our great pro products. And every product
you never see
we
Apple
made
making a plastic
is in the
first computer.
25% of the store. You can see the whole product line. And as you see up on the ceiling, we've even labeled the sections. Home, music, kids, genius on this side, and pro, movie.
Was this the store that they had originally that then Ron Johnson, what was his name, Ron?
Yeah, Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson said, Steve, we've got to do it all over again. Or is this the we did it all over again? I think this must be the we did it all over again version. Looks pretty much like the current Apple store, right?
25% shows you our entire product line. Now, there's 36 computers on display in the store. Every single one of them is connected to the internet. So you can go up to any computer and start surfing.
If you watch this, you realize that what they're doing even today is absolutely, this is the antecedent of that.
Airport wireless networking, so you can experience that for yourself. It's pretty great. So come on over here. Let me show you what we got going in the home section.
I've never seen, I don't remember Steve looking doing this.
We've got iBooks on display. Most of the products are running self-running demos, but you can just walk up to them and start using them for anything you like. And here we've got three iBooks on display. And we've got every single model of iMac we make as well. We've got our new PowerBook G4 Titaniums running here. Again, all running Mac OS 10, all on airport, so you can just pick these
remember
up.
Remember that one of the goals of this is just to get a store where people can actually see a
touch
running
stuff.
Mac.
Yeah, because they were in CompUSA. They were like the ghetto in CompUSA.
And the salespeople weren't getting spiffs on sales, and so there's no they didn't want to
get whatever. You want to buy a Mac? Okay,
Wireless connection to the internet. And we've got every Power Mac we make here, along with all of our great displays, including the 22-inch cinema display.
And I have to say, I thought this was crazy when Apple did it, because Gateway had just closed their stores. They were such a flops trying to do this kind of a similar idea, which is, well, you should see them and touch them before you buy them. And I thought, boy, Apple is really taking a chance going into retail here, another business they don't understand. I said the same thing about the iPhone when they got into that, saying the same thing about services out there in that. They somehow manage cars. We're saying the same thing about cars. They're machine learning. They somehow manage to find their way and invent it and reinvent it.
We come back 7 years later and find out Apple's gotten so much smarter in such a short period of time.
Yeah. And incidentally, from day one, retail was a massive success. And they did need to do it. You know, that really was the problem, is that people weren't getting the best Apple experience. Mm-hmm. Jim, how's Apple Music treating you these days? Did two men come to your home?
Two men did not. But Apple Music, back end of Apple Music is actually getting a whole lot better.
When you saw James Pinkstone's article in Vellum, he complained about something very similar to what happened to you. Did you say,
No, because his problem was different than mine. His was a bug with iTunes. I believe that's what they found out, where it actually did delete physical copies.
It actually did do that, you think? Was it user error?
That's what it appears. Yeah. I mean, they did send people out to his house. So, there have been a lot of issues with Apple Music over the past year, and there's been a lot of improvements in Apple Music over the past year. If you look at the way that the back end of the service works now, it's 100 times better than what it was. And that's good. You know, because of the way that the service is set up, Apple can do a lot of improvements without ever touching the app. You know, without ever touching iTunes. iTunes is just the front end for what you see Apple Music doing. So, you know, if you're looking at a radio station or if you're playing a curated list, all of that stuff is updated in the background. So they're constantly updating things. So, you know, I've been happy with the way that the back end works. iTunes Match and that whole matching thing. They still haven't figured that out. Hopefully that's coming soon. Because if they nail that, then a lot of the problems that people have been having, I think, will go away.
They did release, they did kind of acknowledge that while we can't find this bug, we're worried about it. And they did release a new version of iTunes.
Right.
Was it new dialogue boxes or what was it?
Like the sidebar.
They put the sidebar back. Well, we knew that.
Yeah, they're doing some interesting contextual stuff.
But is this the reinvention that we were talking about for WWC or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
There's going to be more. There's more to come in June.
Timelines are hard.
Yeah.
If you believe what you read, then there should be more coming in June, and you know, I welcome any improvement to it.
Yeah.
Like Jim's just sitting at the table offering you a seat next to him if you're better.
All right. So as far as I could tell, I mean, I looked at when the new one came out, we opened it and I looked at it, and it the dialogue boxes seem no less confusing. So I don't know what
still maintain they've got to become really opinionated about what they want iTunes to be, because they cannot continue to cater to everybody and have a sane product.
Yeah.
It's the kitchen drawer. It's not for anything. It's just where people get things get put because you know you need to have them nearby, but you don't know how to organize it.
Are they actually redesigning from scratch, as everybody's saying they should do, or is this just going to be more Band-Aids?
I mean, again, like it's billions of dollars of transactions. It's people thinking they just bought Nanos on Windows. Yeah. It is an airplane being rebuilt while they are flying it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're definitely considering everything.
And that's the important thing to remember here is that Apple having everything in this one app does make sense because it processes billions of dollars.
Right.
You know, they're very good at processing billions of dollars, and they don't want to lose that. They can't screw that part of it up. So they screw the other part up instead, you know, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes at WDC.
According to a new study, Fitbits are highly inaccurate. This is, I guess, good news for Apple and Apple Watch owners. Although I've been wearing the Fitbit Blaze for some time, and I've compared it to the Apple Watch and to other heart rate monitors and found it to be fairly accurate. This study says this was a study done with, you know, like real at Cal State Poly and in Pomona with real Surge watches, not the Blaze, but the Surge watches and the Charge heart rate bands. And then they hooked people up to like this bio harness and got an ECG out of it. And they said that the Fitbit devices miscalculated heart rates, but up to 20 beats per minute on average, which is significant.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's during more intensive workouts. And that was one of the claims of, a lawsuit against Fitbit was that at higher heart rates, it was wildly inaccurate. Lower heart rates, not so bad. Got to point out the study was sponsored by the law firm that is suing Fitbit. So I don't know. I have to just say that I this has become my fitness device of choice. It doesn't do all the things that the Apple Watch does. I don't find that a particularly big problem. It's certainly not as beautiful as the Apple Watch, but it does record my heart rate well and my exercise well and my steps well, and I haven't noticed that much of a difference. So you're going to see that report. There's nobody questioning that Apple Watch does a very good job with heart rate. Although, this is going to be an interesting battlefield because Fitbit says they're going to add NFC payments next to the Fitbit watches. Pebble also announced, speaking of the competition, two new watches and a pocket computer for runners. Pebble's got to be struggling a little bit with the success of the Apple Watch. Apple Watch really owns this market. Fitbit's the number one seller of fitness devices. So Apple, I don't know if Apple's a runner-up or if it's just a different category. Pebble has been struggling. They were really the company that created this category with their massive Kickstarter launch. But they have yet, I think they're having a little trouble finding their niche.
I think there's yet to be consensus on what consumers actually want
right.
from a wearable. And so it's every year, I think that all these companies are going to be learning a little bit more about what people want. So if the Apple Watch is not 100% there, I think that's going to get there in 3 years. Even if Apple decides that actually we should be making something closer to a Fitbit, or even if they want to make something that's a little bit more active, like an Android Wear watch. But nobody has the right model right yet. I think the only people who are doing a really good job are the people who are making $100 simple bands that do nothing but track and pass notifications, because it's lasts a week. People don't have to change their lifestyle by switching a watch they like or wearing a watch, and it gives them the basic features that give the most immediate impact. $100
I guess we probably should. I've been so reluctant to talk about these iPhone 7 rumors, but we are getting closer now, and it's possible that the iPhone 7s are being made. The supply chain would start to be gearing up around now, right?
Another iPhone, Leo? They're making another iPhone?
We know there's another iPhone. The question is, what will it have? And according to...
I don't have a screen. I'm so bored.
According to 9to5 Mac...
Why did nobody tell me they were making a new
iPhone? Oh, man. All right. Okay. Now, I'm just asking you about these features.
Focus on that shelf behind him.
LG? Will it be an LG dual camera, not a Sony chip? I don't know. OIS in the 4.7-inch models? I don't know. No smart connector, but that's not much of a surprise. That's obviously an iPad feature, not a iPhone.
Can't they make a
feature.
Tiny keyboard? I mean, come on, Apple.
Why are you guys mocking this? Is it silly to talk about it at this point?
No, I love this. I think this is the exciting part, because once Apple actually announces this, all our imaginations are worthless. We'll have an actual product in front of us.
So
now
let's
we
just
have
wait.
Some of all our dreams and potential disappointments. It's amazing.
Four speakers? Do you care? Four speakers with this shadowy...
I really want that. The iPad, the original iPad had a mono speaker, and then the first iPad mini had stereo speakers, but they were at the bottom, which meant that if you held it in any of the other three directions, it was either really weird or your hand was covering them. And now the iPad Pros have those four speakers. It's still stereo, but they do a really good job of mixing things together, even while you're turning it, so you get much better, much louder sound. My iPhone, if I still hold it wrong, I can't listen to this show. So having more than one speaker there would be a dream come true for me. Small dreams, Leo.
They'd be the same kind as is on the iPad Pro, though. You rotate it. You only hear two at a time, though, right? Or do you?
Well, I don't think they could fit those giant echo chambers.
I know.
Because space is a premium on the iPhone.
Yeah. And apparently, serial leaker Steven Hammerstoffer threw a curveball into the rumor mill. I don't know what happens when you throw a curveball into a rumor mill, but he had some leaks from an Italian case maker that has four speakers.
Metallic purple.
This is the worst kind of rumors. Like, well, case maker made four speakers.
Do you realize how little money it costs to tool up if you want to do a production sample just to show buyers that you are in the game and you'll have something to ship? It costs next to nothing compared to what your operating costs are. So that means nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I you notice I left this to the very end of the show. It's like I don't want to talk about it, but
rumors are only fun because they allow us to insist that if Apple puts anything but the keyboard that I like in the next MacBook, it will be a total failure. It allows you to express what you think are important, what you're hoping for, and what would disappoint you.
Will we be getting Siri on the Mac with Mac OS 2016?
So. Yeah.
Just for accessibility. Sure. I mean, it would be huge. There's so many people who just don't have a voice assistant on the Mac and they've gotten so used to it. And Apple, it wasn't a public thing. Tim Cook built this little virtual accessibility house inside Infinite Loop just so Apple could learn about the technology. You know, everyone at Apple, because there's tens of thousands.
What do you do? You put on a blindfold when you go in? How does that work?
No, it wasn't meant for outsiders. So like the details of it escape
me. We don't know.
But for example, you could go there and they would give you a demo of how a cochlear implant works, or show you how someone who's blind would scan money to find out what the money was for, or how they would control lights or heating or make sure they don't burn themselves on a stove.
That's fantastic. That's really great.
Yep.
And it educates the entire company. And that technology, that assistive technology, I mean, Siri plays a huge role in that. And right now it's literally not accessible to anybody, to anybody who's running OS X. And just to have a version of it there so they could say, hey, Shlomo, or yo, Siri, please do this, this, and this, and the Mac will dutifully go and do it for them, is a hugely enabling feature.
Yep.
Yep. It also serves as a reminder that just because Apple has not shipped a product that has what's obviously artificial intelligence or machine learning, or just because there has not been an executive or an engineer at a keynote talking about machine learning, does not mean that they haven't spent hundreds of millions of dollars with a division inside the company that's doing exactly this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They do so many things that aren't even simply exploratory, but because they know they're going to need that resource on an ongoing basis, and they're pretty much tooled up and ready to go for whenever they head in a new direction. And also no major company I think is as focused on accessibility as Apple is.
Yeah, and they might have, I mean, like Siri does have tremendous machine learning. It's not the same way Google does it, but there's tremendous machine learning involved in Siri understanding all, like doing the sequential inference in all these different languages, in all these different regions. I mean, understanding Scottish alone must be, you know, billions of dollars of transactions.
Because we still don't. The Scottish accent is one of my favorites in the world. I love the Scottish accent.
Is that your Siri? You use the Scottish Siri?
I absolutely love it. I love talking to
Scottish.
Is it a
man or a woman?
Mine?
They don't have, they have British and Australian right now.
Yeah, they have the UK one, which I've used. The UK one. Yeah.
We can't get a Scottish Siri.
I want a Scottish one.
I tell you what the weather is like, but all you need to know is it's crap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it just answers every weather query.
Crap.
Siri, can you find me a Mac? If it's not Scotch, it's crap.
It's crap.
It's damn.
You're not going to drink that tea, are you?
Oh, it's huge.
Oh, that's terrible.
Our apologies to everybody of Scottish extraction.
James Thompson, please don't hunt us down.
All our Hebridean friends, we apologize. Final story. They did it again. I love these guys at Monument Valley, the one US 2 games. They last year they did this, and they've done it again, released all the numbers They've been very transparent about how their app, which is a best-selling app in the on the iOS store and is a wonderful app, and you should play it. They point out that what started as a small things from our perspective quickly blew up into parts of industry discussing our data. Apparently, it's not common to be so open. Somehow, the unit of measurement MV has become commonplace. If we can only make 10% of an MV a Monument Valley, we can break even. All-time official downloads. Now, this is over 2 years. 26,102,459. They made $14.378 million. 73% of that revenue from, of course, iOS. Only 17% from Google Play. 1% from Windows. Their highest, second highest one-day revenue was March 1st, 2 days after it was shown on House of Cards. Shows you House of Cards has some value. $69,484 in that one day. 50 million unique devices. Kind of interesting stuff. And these graphs are fascinating. You can see, you know, where the spikes come from. Somebody's Let's Play video, you know, being free on iOS. Biggest spike, actually, Christmas and the House of Cards. Actually, House of Cards easily the biggest spike. And then 99-cent week on iOS, which dwarfs 99-cent week on Google Play, and Christmas. So I love this. Thank you. I think transparency is fabulous. How many times played by one fictional U.S. president? Two by human beings created by team members. 13 featured in 13 museums, gallery, and art festivals. 19 countries visited. 500 fan creations.
How much do they spend on statisticians? Is that in that budget?
50,000 new Twitter followers in the second year. 28,000 in merch sales. That tells you something about merch. I know a little bit about that. You don't get rich on merchandise. They've raised $750,000 for charity since the launch.
See George Lucas.
The times we've been asked to make more. Yeah, he's doing all right in merchandise. But there are a few.
Clayton's Chewbacca mask, another time.
Can you believe that? Wow. Wow. Times we've been asked to make more levels? Infinity. Infinity. So that's kind of neat.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm glad they released these. The Monument Valley numbers for year two. A little, nice little Medium post on there. We're going to take a break, come back in a moment, give you guys a chance to make some picks or tips or anything you'd like to leave our audience with. But before we do that, I'd like to take something away from our audience. Their scratchy, hairy beards. I got a better way to shave. Well, not you, Jim. I'm sorry.
Oh, but you, I'll tell you, I have a Harry's kit.
And you don't use it?
I know, on the sides.
Oh, you have to. You have to clean up there. Yeah.
Harry's.
Even people who have beards have to groom a little.
I love Harry's.
Yeah. We all love Harry's. Harry's makes high quality, high performance blades. You sell them directly from their factory in Germany. And they feel great, but the best part is they cost so much less than those drugstore blades. And they come to your door on schedule. So you never have to shave an extra day with a dull blade. You always have a nice, sharp, brand new blade available. And there are no more lines at the drugstore feeling like a criminal as they unlock the plexiglass pane to get at the razor blades. A million guys now have made the shift to Harry's. I think we could take credit for a few hundred of those. Why don't you go to harrys.com, check it out. I'm a fan of the Winston set, and I have that copper winter Winston from last year, and they do special models and the silver handle. But a lot of people, including, by the way, Steve Gibson and others, prefer the Truman set because they like the soft touch plastic handle. All the blades are the same. It's really just a question of which handle you want. The nice thing about the Truman set is you can go get the Truman kit and get yourself started with Harry's for $15. That includes the handle, three blades, that traveling blade cover, and a full-size, not a sample, but a full-size jar, or what do you call that, bottle of the foaming shave gel or tube of the shave cream. That's actually what I use. I love how it smells, and I love how it smooths my skin and makes it easy to shave. Never a nick, never a cut, never a scrape because of Harry's. I just love them. Now, we got a better deal for you because when you go to harrys.com/MacBreak, you can get that Truman kit for $10. $5 off your first order, whatever it may be. $5 off at Harry's, HARRYS.com/MacBreak. Hey, if it's good enough for the beard, it's good enough for you. Did we send you that, or did you just go out and get it?
No.
They're a sponsor of your show, probably.
I got it from Harry's. Yeah, nice. I use it. It's great.
Love them. Love them. You can use Jim's code if you want. It's okay. I bet you all have offer codes.
No, they haven't. They haven't sponsored in a while, so I don't have a code.
Okay. Sponsor. Buy an ad on Jim's. What is your podcast, Jim? Is it loopinsight.com? Is that where I should go to get it?
Yeah, it's the Dalrymple Report.
The Dalrymple Report.
Yeah.
It's such a good name. That would be good in Scottish. It's the Dalrymple Report. Report.
I'm listening to the Dalrymple Report.
I love it. If you go to loopinsight.com and click on the Dalrymple Report podcast.
But you know what?
What?
My heritage is Scottish, so.
I know, I could tell.
I can talk Scottish.
I can see that you would look good in a kilt.
Yeah, the Dalrymple Tartan is incredibly close to Guns N' Roses. It's just very similar.
I bet you have manly calves. Dave Wiskus on your... both Dave and Joe on to talk about airplane mode. That's nice.
Yeah.
And the perils of performing live. That's on the most recent one.
There are a lot of perils.
There are perils indeed. The perils of Pauline. Jim, you want to give us a heavy metal plug?
I want to give you a hard rock plug.
Hard rock.
Hard rock. So there's a band called Monster Truck.
Aptly named, seriously. No doubt.
No. They are so good. I get so many emails from listeners of MacBreak Weekly when I recommended Blackstone Cherry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Monster Truck is just like Blackstone Cherry. They're not metal. They're bluesy, hard rock, and it.
Oh God! Holy cow! It's a little loud in here.
See?
I like this kind of rock. This is my kind of rock. They don't make music like this anymore. Oh, it's blowing out our speakers.
See, that is just great music.
I love it. I love it.
So, yeah, that's who I'd like to recommend. I listen to them a lot just because it's just straight ahead rock. You know, it's just great songs. I love it.
Monster Truck at ilovemonstertruck.com. And the new album is out now. Awesome. That's hysterical. I love it.
See, Leo, I give you recommendations that other people just can't.
No, I love them. I'm taking off my clothes. Oh, no.
Who?
Can't do that again. Looks like they're building the Apple campus there.
Save it for Twitter. Yeah.
I talked to somebody who's working on the Apple campus, who shall remain nameless. And he talked about those big panes of glass, you know, on the circular, because the wall of it is all curved glass. He says those cost $135,000 each. And when they order them, they have to order them in tens because to get the foundry up and running, they don't want to make less. They can't make one. And he said that can add up because at least four or five have been broken by people backing into them. Or other accidents on the job site.
Wow.
And when you break one, that's not $135,000 down the tubes. That's $1.35 million down the tubes because you got to get 10 more.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's how my house works, Leo. Isn't that how your house works?
Yeah. He also said, again, no names here, they did not understand or predict, the engineering firms involved did not understand or predict the amount of heat and the buckling and the expansion that the campus would undergo. And he said, we're having a lot of trouble keeping the floors flat.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Whoops.
Whoops.
Whoops. So he was saying, I'm thinking September next year before they're opening. Oh. I said, I bet they're rushing, though, to get that theater done. He said, yeah. He said, you know, it's smaller than you'd think, the theater. And it is almost done. But yes, there's some inside stuff. I don't know if it's true. I didn't check his ID. Sounds true.
Every college campus has at least 15 really good urban legends about the buildings, including the yes, but the engineer of the library didn't factor in how much the books would weigh, and so that's why they put these extra trusses in. Yes,
yeah, they'll fix it. Of course, they'll fix it. Of course, Andy, what's your pick of the week?
I got kind of an oddball pick. I love the videos on tested.com, and there was one recently where Adam Savage was making a foam core replica of the house he grew up in, and he had these. Yeah, but as usual, it's like fascinating to like watch someone who's good at doing something do things, and also you learn techniques. So he had like on his work table like these steel blocks that were like this, and he keeps like using them, just putting them places and like pushing them out of the way. And like the eighth time he did that, he stopped and said, "Oh, by the way, these are called 1-2-3 blocks, and they're useful for like 100 different things. And I'm using it like this, I'm using it like this." And so I went to Amazon, and they cost like you can buy a pair of these steel blocks for like $13, $14. And their pertinent features are that they're called 1-2-3 blocks because it's exactly 1 inch thick, exactly 1 inch wide, and exactly 3 inches, 2 inches wide, exactly 3 inches on this dimension. And all the corners are exactly 90 degrees. So you can do, I just bought them and put them like on my desk here. And the number of times where I just needed to keep a cable from walking away, so I just put this 1-pound block of steel on top of it. It doesn't crush, it just keeps it from walking away. Or every time that I needed to prop up something, so I just sort of like sandwich it between these two things, and suddenly I've got this vertical like wall or something like that. The times where he was using it in a way that I've also been using it, which is you can just sort of, because these are perfectly square, you can basically if you need to, if you're gluing like a vertical thing to like a horizontal thing, you can just sort of like sandwich it between these two. These are two, again, 1-pound steel blocks. So the vertical thing is not going to go walking away or tilting away until the glue has set. It's not that it's for this one thing. It's just that you now have a really, really 1-pound block of milled steel that is perfectly square and is of perfectly known dimensions. And so if you just have this on your desk, you will find places, times and places where you need a weight or something that is perfectly a right angle or something that's exactly an inch. And so, and also they're kind of like really intense Legos, you know,
so I feel like
I want to go to Home Depot. A lot of these holes are threaded, and I just want to buy some like bolts to see what I can put. If I want to actually like make a little like steel fort or something out of them, I don't know, whatever, but they're cheap enough that I'm gonna buy like another set or two, because they're just like really cool things to have around and really useful things once you have them.
Are the holes appropriate for like putting a pen or a pencil in? Could they be like that?
No, they're not quite big enough for that. I've got my
that'd be a cool pen holder.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah
they're not quite big enough for that. I'm looking for, like, I've got my spudger, so yeah, it'll hold your spudger okay. Really nicely.
Okay,
but I think a pencil would work just fine. I don't think that most pens would fit correctly.
You can get them; they're about $15 on Amazon for the pair. And I noticed that they have pairs with no holes, one hole, yep, or all the holes.
Because these are actual machinist tools, and there's if you go on the web and look for like machinists blogs and machinist message boards, there are all kinds of people who discuss ways in which they use their blocks, but everybody has a different list of things they use them for. Again, the salient feature is just that here is a massive metal that is exactly precisely a certain, it's not almost an inch, it's exactly an inch, not almost 90 degrees, it's exactly 90 degrees. So if you need to like dial in a machine, if you want to test to see if a micrometer is working, or if you want to like, if you need to make sure there's a certain gap between that so that your tool head does not go smashing into the table, you can screw this down and dog it down. And they're actually not even less expensive secondhand on eBay. They really are like about $6 or $7 each. The only caveat is that these arrived like wrapped, dipped in oil, machinist oil, and wrapped in paper.
So they won't rust. Right?
So they don't rust. And yeah. So I did have to sort of like, you know.
Yours are nice and shiny. Are they just hardened? Where'd you get? I mean, which ones did you get?
That's exactly, Amazon link I sent you is exactly what I got. It is
cool.
Like it's just a beautiful object. You don't know where this came from. And it's just a nice thing to have. But I bet you could use it as a pen holder. But I'm thinking about, I have a big box of just like metal findings. I bet that if I put
this between a couple blocks with some spacers in between. I really want to make this into more of a permanent sort of cable stay by having these separated by just enough so that you could pass a cable through them sideways. But as soon as you lay the cable flat, like, it can't escape from there. Just lots of ideas come to mind. But again, it's a cool thing that doesn't cost a whole lot of money. And once you find it on your desk, you will find that, oh, I really needed something that is perfectly square to keep this thing from falling over. Oh, look, I've got this thing that is heavy enough that something's not going to fall over. And it makes you feel like a real nerd to have a machinist tool on there. And yeah, it is just shiny and beautiful.
Now, you can also get them coated in titanium nickel coating.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a little more expensive. I like how shiny yours are, though.
They're beautiful. Yeah. Even if you don't have like nice LED studio lighting, it's like the opening to like a 1983 CGI demo where it's all like perfect geometric things and it's always perfectly reflective. And yeah. So I gotta thank Adam Savage. It's like one of those things that you've never heard of. But then it's like, this is one of the neatest things I've ever spent $15 on in my life because I really enjoy having them.
And they're like true to 0.00002.
Yeah.
I mean, they're precise.
And you can buy other versions of this that are like $80 and they come in a rosewood box because like Well, no, not as a gift. It's like if you are like building spacecraft components and it has to be within a 0.00001% tolerance, you know that this is no more. This is not off by more than 0.00000. You know, one an electron's fart is thicker than the amount that might be off of its actual measurement.
Somebody's saying they should be magnetic. That'd be kind of cool.
I don't know if I'd want to have a magnetic thing nearby, but okay.
Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week. Oh, Rene's muted. I don't know if that's us or you.
No, it's me. Sorry. I'm positive that Andy and Jason Snell and people have picked this before, but I'm going back to Comixology today, now owned by Amazon, of course. And it was a great app where you could go and buy comic books, you know, comic books that were day and date, more increasingly with actual physical releases. And what they've gone and done now is made Comixology unlimited. So, yeah, up front, we should know there's no Marvel and DC participating. Marvel has their own offering, Marvel Unlimited. But if you want the independent comics, if you want the other comic publishers, this is a great way to sort of get all you can eat, sort of Netflix style, for especially indie, really creative, creator owned, also a lot of licensed properties here as well, but just yet another endless source of comic book entertainment that is just great on any iPad. I've used it on iPhone too, but on the iPad, especially a beautiful iPad Pro, it's just phenomenal experience. So again, there are caveats, no Marvel, no DC, but there are so many really, really, really great titles besides that. And I think they're including now at launch Dark Horse, Image, IDW, Boom, Oni, Archie, Valiant, Fantagraphics, and more. So if you, it's a great way to actually learn about comics that aren't Marvel and DC, including, you know, Joss Whedon did three or so seasons of Buffy after the TV show went down. So you can still go and buy a la carte all the main, you know, all the Marvel and DC stuff that you want. You can buy them, you know, per issue, but you can just subscribe to Unlimited and get more comics than you could comfortably read in a normal human lifetime.
Yeah, that Unlimited. You get the first month for the $6 a month. The first month is free. Yep. So even if you just say that for 2 months, I'm going to read every issue of Usagi Yojimbo, one of my favorite comics ever, and every issue of Saga, another one of my favorite comics ever. And as soon as I've read every single issue that's ever been published or that's available through Comixology, I will then cancel. That's $6 extremely well spent.
Yeah, phenomenal deal.
I am going to show you something that I refused for a long time to do, but now they've talked me into it. On Saturday, we're going to take my nice, sweet MacBook Pro 2012 and turn it into a Chromebook. Well, here's one of the nice things. You can turn it into a dual boot Chromebook if you want. Chrome OS has been around as an open source project. They call it Chromium OS for some time, but it really has been for developers. In fact, if you go to the Chromium OS site, you'll see you have to build from source. A company called Neverware has taken it and made it so that you can install it as you would a Linux, for instance, as a disk image on a USB key on a variety of older hardware, both Windows and Mac. And they have now a dual boot feature for some Macs. This is free for individual use, $25 for schools, $49 per device per year for businesses. And then you get some extra stuff with that, including tech support, and licenses are transferable. So if you saw all the announcements Google made at Google I.O. last week and you said, boy, I wouldn't mind trying Android on Chrome OS. Well, one way you could do it is to do, make a dual boot. And it wouldn't take much of your hard drive. I think Chrome OS will run pretty well in 4 or 5 gigabytes. And you can make a dual boot on your Mac. So we're going to, if you want to watch it happen live, we're going to do that on Saturday on the new Screensavers. I'm going to take this MacBook Pro I've been using. And, you know, it's 4 years old. It's not, you know, state of the art. And I think a lot of schools can, you can use pretty old, like even up to like 8 year old MacBooks to do this. Might want to, you know, one way you could get computers in the hands of kids, take old computers, Windows and Mac, and turn them into Chromebooks. So this, we're going to try this neverwear.com if you want to try it yourself. I think it's an interesting idea. It really is just a Linux distro. I mean, Google won't say that, but it is. It's a specially designed Linux distro. Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded this edition of Mac Break Weekly. And I'm so glad you could be here. So glad you could be here, Jim Dalrymple. Look forward to your party, the Beard Bash.
I'm happy to be invited. Thank you, Leo. It's good to be here.
We'd love to have you on loopinsight.com. He's at J Dalrymple on the Twitter. Does the Beard have its own account?
It does, but it's not me that does it.
Is it Jim's Beard?
It's the Beard.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but my Beard has a Twitter account. My Heineken bottle has a Twitter account. I don't do any of them. I only do mine. So, yeah, but every once in a while, my Heineken bottle will tweet me. And, you know, that's kind of funny.
I love it. Jim, great to see you. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll see you
soon.
Thanks, Leo. Renee Ritchie at imore.com. And, of course, not only does Jim have his podcast, Renee's got his podcast. You'll find his at imore.com. And now two of them. Although I noted that when Georgia Dow was on Twitter on Sunday, I was looking, and the new Apple Talk wasn't on the website yet.
I mean, it's a Drupal view that's supposed to be replaced, but it takes a developer to do that view thing. So we've been doing it at imore.com/apple-talk, and okay. Go straight there. And okay. We just had Horace Dedya on to talk about Apple Car.
Love him.
Yeah, and this week we're going to have Carolina Milanese talking about assistive technology like Siri and Google Now and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The new podcast, imore.com/apple-talk. You can go directly there, and soon it will be at imore.com/podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Leo.
Andy Anatko, he's at the Chicago Sun-Times. And
thank you.
Always a fun to have you on. Anything you want to plug? You got the Material podcast. I bet you talked a little bit about Google I.O. this week.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're having a whole bunch of Google's VR engineers on the show.
Cool.
Probably going to be on next week's show. I don't know if we're recording it this week or next week, but we got a lot of exciting things to talk about today, if that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll be listening. That's great. Thank you, Andy. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, we'd love it if you would. Join us in our chat at irc.twit.tv. But if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is always available at our website, twit.tv/mbw for this show, or in your favorite podcatcher. And we're everywhere. And the new BitTorrent application on Apple TV should be up, BitTorrent Live. And I think we're one of the debut channels on there. So if you want to watch live via BitTorrent Live, you can do that as well directly on your Apple TV. That's fine with me. Of course, that makes it 6 now applications on Apple TV that will let you watch Twit on your Apple TV. And we got it on the Roku and Windows and iOS and Android and everywhere you want it. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now, break time is over. So back to work with you.